Monday, February 12, 2007. Welcome, members. Hope you all had fine weekends. We are fortunate to have with us today representatives from our regional universities to give us an update on how things are going on their campuses and what they see for the future. And thank all of you in advance for taking the time to be here today. We greatly appreciate it. I'd like to invite our chancellor back up to visit with us again and perhaps offer a overall introduction for the presentation today.
Thank you, Chair Buckley. For the record, my name is George Kernsteiner. I'm with the Oregon University System. I appreciate the opportunity to join you here today to talk about the Oregon University System's regional universities. I will first apologize for the weather. Apparently, the weather in Klamath Falls iced up all airplanes, and so Martha Ann Dow and her staff are driving. So they will be a bit late, and I apologize in advance, but they will be here, and she will therefore be the last of our presidents to speak, with your indulgence. The OUS regional campuses contribute to both opportunity and educational attainment for people throughout the state. They serve about 17,000 students, and last year granted more than 3,900 degrees and certificates. So they provide a significant portion of the education at the post-secondary level in this state. The main focus has been historically on teaching, but teaching a special kind of student. Teaching a student who may be place-bound, who is from that region primarily, who may be lower income. In fact, the statistics for financial aid at our regional campuses, far more as a percentage of the students of those campuses are on need-based aid than at the other campuses. And they're also largely first-generation students. So the kinds of students whom they serve are the ones who require or wish the kind of attention that will allow them to be successful because they have not come from backgrounds of having higher education in their families before. So they have a focus on teaching and teaching a certain kind of student from that region primarily. They also have a focus on service to their regions. They are the local universities for students in that area, as I mentioned, but they are also the intellectual and cultural focal points for communities and for businesses, and they are themselves major employers in their regions. Right now, though, they are financially fragile. They do not have the capacity to raise tuition income that the larger campuses do. And frankly, that's for two reasons. The first is, again, the demographics of their student body, the lower income of their student population, argues against the ability to raise tuition. The second is that they do not attract as many students from out of state paying 3.5 times the in-state rate as do some of the larger campuses. So their revenue from tuition is more it is less than that you might expect from the system-wide average. Their economies of scale are limited. Because they are small, they do not have the ability to spread their costs against as large a base of customers or students, depending upon what we're talking about. And they have, in this biennium, depleted their reserves. As you know, all seven of our campuses are defining their roles as part of the board's strategic planning effort with the intention to increase the education level of Oregonians in advanced knowledge. In fact, the OSU Cascades campus will be the second campus to discuss with the board its mission and its purpose for the next 20 years, and they will do that at the March board meeting. The OSU Corvallis campus did so at the February meeting. Increasing knowledge and educational attainment of all Oregonians in every part of the state is essential if we are to be successful in the 21st century. The regionals play a very important role in providing access to quality education for students who are outside the metropolitan areas. And at that point, Mr. Chair, unless there are questions, I'd like to turn it over to Jay Casbon, who is the Executive Dean of the Oregon State University campus, Cascades campus in Bend, to sort of kick off the discussion of the regional campuses.
See, no questions, that would be fine.
Mr. Chair?
Sorry, hold on, Mr. Chancellor, we do have a question.
I have just one small question concerning what's the definition of a first-generation student?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, it is a student who is from a family that has not, whose parents did not go to school, did not go to a university.
Oh, okay.
So someone whose parents do not have a degree.
Okay, I thought the first generation means like me come from other countries.
It could be.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chancellor. Jay Casbon, OSU Cascades. Glad to be here to talk about the smallest campus we have in the state and one of the most exciting areas of the state, as you all know, of course, Central Oregon. This is a shot. We are co-located on the Central Oregon Community Campus. And just a little background about who we are and the region we're in. I don't have to tell anybody here that we're incredibly challenged at times and also very grateful for the growth that we have. And 53% is a very high number, and there's no sign of that abating very much. Population is also growing dramatically, and we're looking at rather large numbers in the immediate future. One of the things I included, because so often I hear this from my own colleagues on the main campus in Corvallis, that they see Central Oregon as a mecca for retired folks, and the data does not support that, and hasn't for quite some time. But one of the more interesting groups that follow demographic trends, the Sonoran Institute, has been following Central Oregon as a result of many banks and businesses moving there and looking at data. And this is a piece that we picked up just recently. The fastest growing age group is 34 to 45. And I include that because it bodes well, I think, for the diversity and balance of the region, but it also, I think, bodes well for a growing university. The city is, as I said, challenged by growth, but the city also quite wisely sees this as an amazing opportunity. So 2 years ago, they kicked off what's called the 2030 Plan, which is a massive community endeavor made up probably hundreds of thousands of hours that go in with citizens from many, many stakeholders, including the community college that we're so tightly partnered with, universities, the school district, just to come together and say what kind of city of Bend do we want by the year 2030. And 80% of the respondents in an area vision survey of May 2006 indicated the very how important it is to have a university situated in the region and how important that is for the overall area. 84% rated the statement, quote, Bend's new university and community college are actively involved in community affairs, promoting higher education community collaboration, and serving local problems as also important to very important.
Mr. Chair. Was in agreement. As a social scientist, I can't help but commenting that somebody would have to be a university graduate to figure out what that sentence meant.
It is hard.
Therefore, it might bias the results. So.
We had one that had twice as much, and we had to shorten it down just to get that. appreciate the point. Of the,
never put a sentence like that on this one.
We have 27 to 28,000 students in our public schools in the region. And Ben Lapine alone, since 2005-2007, has grown about 1,100 students. And again, to give you an idea, that's a medium-sized elementary school every year, and that's just one district. Employment growth are figures that you've seen here in the local paper as well as the Oregonian. I don't think that's any surprise. There's some more data coming out next month that indicates it's a little more detailed breakdown of the region, but it's similar kinds of numbers. Campus profile, we opened in spring 2001, first class is fall 2001. Our enrollment in 2006, 495. Our pipeline, you have to understand that we are an upper division and graduate entity only. Lower division courses are supplied by our other major partner. We have two. U of O is our partner in COCC, and Central Oregon Community College provides our lower division courses. And those students are duly enrolled, which makes us fairly unique. So they actually are admitted to OSU Cascades as they are also a freshman for Central Oregon Community College. So they are truly duly enrolled students. And why that is important is that they are eligible for scholarship money that comes from OSU. We have our own regional affiliate, a 501(c). The branch says it's part of the larger OSU Foundation. And so they're eligible for scholarship money. We track in terms of number of students who receive financial aid. We're very close to where Oregon University system is also between 66 and 68%. And we see that number pretty stable for us. Students graduated since spring 2006, 189. We've graduated close to 860. Our commencement in June will take us well over 1,000. Again, I've mentioned our partners, main partners, University of Oregon and Central Oregon Community College. Just some enrollment data. Our fall term was up about 1%, which we expected, and we knew we'd have dramatic growth this term, and this term we're up 15%, or almost 15%. And just some data there that we wanted to show that you can see trends, possibly. We just completed our strategic plan. This is our mission. Comment on our vision. We're really focusing on high-quality programs. And for us, and this is unusual for a branch campus, not only are our programs regionally accredited, but they're nationally accredited. And we have a business program undergraduate that is nationally accredited. That's very rare. And our other two nationally accredited programs are in education and counseling. We feel that we will continue to add the strength of those kinds of programs to the programmatic mix. Our strategic goals, pretty clear. Always around academic excellence, enhancing student experience. I must say a word of praise for our students. When we first opened, students took it on a pledge of faith from the faculty that the courses they needed the next year would be there. Because when they would look on the web or look on the course sheet and the catalog, those classes weren't there because we were building them as we needed them, and we've done that. And they've had the experience of a very small campus with high interaction with faculty. So it's worked out really well. Our biggest challenge, of course, which I think is similar to many of the regionals, is the resource, how to sustain that to build some of our core programs. We do have a signature program, which we call a unique program, and that's outdoor recreation and leadership. And we hope to add to that. These are some of the unique programs. Our business is focused on entrepreneurship. We certainly will build increasingly on natural resources. I mentioned outdoor recreation, leadership, and tourism. It's a big area. It's a big cluster. Education is another area that we'll continue to build. And then, of course, general science, biology, and hopefully healthcare, because that's true from everywhere in Oregon, probably in the United States. But we, too, have to pay attention to that. We applauded our president, Ed Ray, in signing an MOU with OHSU, which will get, along with U of O, pre-med courses. And down the road, we think we should be involved with that as well. We just don't see the enrollment growth slowing down as we look over the long-term picture. And as long as we can focus our program growth and align it to the economic needs of the region, we're a member of EDCO, which is the Central Oregon Planning Regional Authority, which we do. We do that very tightly with Central Oregon Community College. We think we'll have the programs, the industry needs, that our students needs in a timely fashion, and that's what we've been rolling out over the last 6 years. We do see the important need, as does OSU in general in the main campus, for support from many different sources and not just the state. And we feel we're in an ideal location to take advantage of that situation. I would be remiss if I did not say that we, with all the growth that we're having, that we don't have facility challenges, building programs when we need them. We, of course, have those challenges. And I also would say to you just as quickly, what great challenges to have. I mean, this is what you want. You want to scratch your head on how we're going to do this. How are we going to do that? How are we going to get more classroom space as we need it? We do. We've been able to. We started with 38,000 square feet 6 years ago. We added another 8,000. This is all located on the COCC campus. We feel we just did, as part of the strategic plan, a facility study. We're going to need another 38,000. So, you know, either it's going to be on the main campus or at Juniper Ridge. We just don't know. But these, again, are the challenges we want to face squarely. We think there are solutions there. We belong to the Central Oregon Regional Consortium. I am very proud of this because it shows the pre-K-20 alignment of the region. These are our partners. We do everything as part of a team. I would not be truthful if I said there weren't tensions there between institutional priorities, but there are, and they're discussed frankly. And I think that's how you get the common ground, make the issues you have to do, and come up with the creative solutions that this region, with its growth, will have to look at, I think, very candidly. It's a great group of people. We meet at least once a month, sometimes more often. Our latest project is around a sustainability effort that could possibly be located on Juniper Ridge. I can't say how proud I am of the 2+2 partnership we have with the community college. We can deliver a four-year education. We can do it for 20% less. I like to say to my colleagues, and nobody smiles but me, that we are the JetBlue of the OUS system. Some students can get through, actually, with even more savings. And the reason they can do that is the community college rates, as you know, are less. So it's a great opportunity for our students. Students understand this, and they're coming to us to take advantage of this. One of our fastest growing areas for student growth are transfer students, and we're going to start to focus on transfer students from other community colleges. We just signed an MOU with community colleges in California. We expect continued growth, and that's a big number because we think we can do this through graduate programs. I was just told this morning that our counseling program was very much oversubscribed, and we'll have to look at that. We have more students than we can serve in some areas. I would like to point out that we think we're a good investment because even with the limited funding that we've had to work with, we feel we've done our best to deliver the services that the region has wanted. I think we're poised to make significant contributions. We're part of the Incubator Project, which is a unique program where we put together faculty of the community college and the business community and St. Charles Hospital and OSU for venture capitalists to float their ideas and also to find funding for them. And that's something we do. And there are all kinds of partnerships like that that we're involved in, and this is just the beginning. So I hope I left you with a positive message about what's trying to happen, what is happening at the Branch campus. It's a pleasure to work with Ed Ray and the wonderful team in Corvallis, and with so much help, and also two great partners, the Community College and the University of Oregon. They've been great working together, and I think we've got a great team. Thank you. Questions?
Thank you very much. Doctor, I think I'll invite your state senator up, one of your other partners who might want to offer some comments.
Stay right there.
Welcome, Senator.
Thank you. For the record, Senator Ben Westland, District 27, and I am proud to be sitting at this witness stand with the individual to my right who has done a job that is exemplary, unbelievable. And just a short little history of where this all came from. For a long time, the cry in Central Oregon was that Bend is the largest geographic area in the continental United States without a four-year degree-granting institution within 160 miles of its population center. And there was one very telling, no disparaging remarks to Dave Frohnmayer or University of Oregon, certainly, but University of Oregon comes over every winter and does a wonderful choir presentation. And one winter, they had to cancel because of the very inclement weather.
Well, that's the very inclement weather that many of our students were having to drive over to get to either Corvallis or Portland or Eugene. I mean, as you can all well imagine, not just the convenience but the access issue of a four-year degree granting institution close to what at that point in time, as I mentioned, was the largest geographic area in the United States without a four-year degree granting institution with 160 miles. That same area today is the sixth fastest growing SMSA in the continental or in the United States. I mean, the need is without question there. And when we were first able to put this project together with the great cooperation of the community college, OSU, who has continued to follow through the chancellor's office, Joe Cox, and now George Pernsteiner. It has been a very collaborative effort. But as we first funded this in 01, at the very end of a robust economic cycle in the state of Oregon, we then entered the worst recession in this state's history. You all know the consequences of that, and I give Mr. Casbon all the credit in the world for holding this thing together with a great deal of innovation and cooperation, both from Oregon State University, the Chancellor's Office, and his gifted leadership. We started this with an original appropriation of $7.2 million. We're now in not inflation adjusted dollars, actual dollars, 6.9, with increased student caseloads. Again, compliments to the man on my right and the entire university system for helping to hold this noble project together. It is without question an asset to the entire state of Oregon. This isn't just about Bend, just like Southern and Eastern and OIT and Western aren't just benefits of those communities, although they certainly do benefit those communities and are significant economic engines in those regions. OSU Cascades is a quality of life. It's for every reason. It's for quality of life, student enrichment, personal accomplishment. It's part and parcel to our community, and it's an absolute, absolute necessity. We continue, you know, to support this, both in terms of structure, legislation, and I know this isn't a Ways and Means Committee, but certainly with dollars. I appreciate your time, and thank you for inviting me to testify.
Thank you, Senator. Gentlemen, any questions? Representative Greenlick.
Thank you. And Senator, I'll be glad to give you all the money we have here.
How much do you have on you?
I'd like to ask a question about the students who are admitted to this campus. Are they OSU students?
OSU and University of Oregon students.
But I mean, they could, for example, go over and take us a quarter over at Corvallis.
Do. And they go, and it comes the other way too.
So that it's completely interchangeable in that context.
Yes, and I think there's ways we could do an even better job in that in the future.
Great, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? I had a couple questions about student retention. Can you give me any information on that? Students who have enrolled at community college, making it all the way through. What are the numbers looking like?
The students who are duly enrolled, and those are the only students that I track, retention rates are very high. We're talking in the 70% area.
Excellent.
And it's even higher once they get into upper division classes. I would like to have in the high 80s as a goal. And I think that's doable in our area.
Yeah.
So we're very proud of that.
Very good. And can I ask a question about full-time faculty to part-time faculty ratio?
We are probably 60-40, 60% full-time. And it changes from term to term to term. I'd be comfortable with the 50-50 mix, but not beyond that.
Very good. Jim, any other questions?
We just have a lot of talented retired faculty in that area that
we do, and it's a resource that we take advantage of, and it's an amazing resource. These are people from all over the world who come to Central Oregon who have PhDs from very prestigious institutions who want to teach a course or two, and we use them very diligently.
Spoken by a retired faculty member,
there you go.
Of course. So, I applaud you for the partnerships you've been able to develop. It really is quite impressive. It's a great story for our state. Thank you for
Thank
being
you
here.
Thank you very much.
What question, Mr. Chief?
Representative Lim.
That a chart I have seen here, page 4, You have FT students about 300, maybe 25, 350, but at the same time, that the head count is about 650, something like that. So it seems to me a lot of part-timers.
Yes, and
in the institution.
I'm glad you brought that up, because the trend is to more full-time students. And in fact, when I first showed up, many of our students were taking a large portion of their load through web-based systems. And now it's only a very small percentage. Students are showing up. They want that face-to-face interaction, and they're coming and taking more courses every time. And so that's why the FTE piece is the way it is. I think that's encouraging and absolutely fundamental to our programmatic growth. We've got to see that kind of relationship.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Senator, for stopping by.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry, we have Representative Klim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I doubt this question is actually for these folks. It's probably for George. But in the chart called Employment Growth, page 5, December 2006, and it shows over the last year where the employment growth took place. Mm-hmm. I just wondered if someone could get to me the source, because I have another use I'd like to use that for, and I just...
Be happy to.
Okay. Be solid on my citation, since we're in an academic sort of arena here, Mr. Chair.
Very good, Representative.
Yeah, if that was put together 2 months ago, the top line is further out now.
Should we color that in a little bit?
Yeah, today? Yeah.
All right.
Use your discretion, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, gentlemen. I believe on our list, we're going to ask to hear from Eastern Oregon University next. To skip some pages, gentlemen.
Thank you, President.
You're welcome.
Members of the committee. For the record, my name is Hotspot Kapuni, and I'm president of Eastern Oregon University. Our goal at Eastern Oregon University is to provide affordable access to quality higher education to the students of the region of Eastern Oregon. We pursue these goals through our main campus in La Grande, as well as 17 centers throughout the state of Oregon. We also pursue these through partnerships beyond our own program offerings, through partnerships with several other universities and community colleges. For example, we have a nursing program on our campus, which is in partnership with OHSU. We have a dental hygiene program in La Grande, which is in partnership with OIT, and we have a long-standing agriculture program, which is in partnership with OSU. We also have a nationally recognized and fairly advanced distance education. A large percentage of our students are distance education. We have an active community and regional engagement with the community of La Grande. The service region that we have consists of 10 counties, easternmost counties of the state. These counties altogether make up 42% of the state's land mass, but only 5% of its population. As far as I know, we are the only university in the country with a service region which comprises of two time zones. In order to achieve our goals, we have a number of initiatives and activities to enable us to reach our goals and to provide access to more higher education to the students of the region. We have a rural high school outreach program, which is early intervention, that is based on the belief that the decision whether or not the student goes to college is not made in his or her senior year. That decision is made significantly earlier. So we approach high school freshmen, or even earlier, we go to their classes and we talk about college education, not so much about Eastern Oregon University, but about college education, trying to get them interested in college. Our approach is very simple. We ask the students not to make the decision that they are not going to go to college at that time. Ask them to take a few college prep courses, We all know nobody takes calculus for the fun of it. but take those, we ask them, and in your senior year, decide whether or not you want to go to college. If you do decide to go to college, you end up a labor pool that for which unemployment rate is less than half the national average, which goes way over 14-year-old's head, but also we tell them that if you get a college degree, you end up with a lifelong earnings, which is about $1,974,000 more than without that degree. And that one 14-year-olds understand. We need to do a lot more for our persistence, freshman, sophomore persistence rate and retention in general, even though we are not out of line with other regional universities in the country. Nevertheless, that's too low. We started last year a first-year experience to enable our students to have more access to faculty and staff. We started an integrated studies program for students at risk, and basically we keep them in a cohort for the entire year and stay with them. Our most comprehensive and ambitious program is our Rural Access Initiative. This chart really consists of three different comparisons. The first one, if you look at the two green columns, that's the percentage of adults with college degree for Oregon as a whole. By the way, these are all 2000 census numbers. Everything has improved a little bit for Oregon as a whole, but not for Eastern Oregon. The percentage of adults with college degree in the state as a whole is 25%, which is not very good. But for Eastern Oregon is 15.5%. If you compare the blue columns, the percentage of 18 to 24-year-olds in college for the state as a whole is 31%, so it's going from 25 to 31. That's good, and eventually that will go up, and more people will have college education. But if you look at Eastern Oregon, that is on a downward trend. Not by much, but nevertheless, it's on a downward trajectory. I used to be an economist, and I used to do these things for a living, and this is the first time that I've seen a region outside war and civil war and all of that. This is the first time I've seen a region with a declining college education. The reasons for that, we have a declining population. Most counties of Eastern Oregon are losing population. The population is growing older and ironically also younger. In other words, it's growing. The percentage of a population over 65 and under 18, both are increasing. The economy is not diverse. There is very little manufacturing base, and the economy used to be all agriculture and lumber and logging and that's no longer there. And maybe a significant problem is that many high school graduates who go outside the region to get a college degree do not return back to the state, or to the region, sorry. Why is the level of education as low as it is? First is access. As I indicated earlier, we have a region which is 42% of the state's landmass. La Grande is not within commuting distance of anywhere. Nobody can, well, I shouldn't say that. Baker might be a possibility, and Pendleton, but basically we're not where people can commute to La Grande to get a college degree. Cost of higher education has increased significantly over the years. But if you look at the cost of higher education, not so much in terms of dollars and cents, but in terms of percentage of income, then for Eastern Oregon, that becomes a prohibitive factor. Because median family income or per capita income, however you look at it, whichever criterion you use, the one for rural Oregon, for Eastern Oregon, is significantly less than the state average. But the cost of going to college is the same. So the percentage of an individual's income or a family's income spent on higher education for one student is significantly higher. We also have some cultural and social factors which make it more difficult for students to go to college. For example, college-going culture needs a lot of support and enhancement. And that's where our Rural Access Initiative will be very helpful. The reality is on this particular situation that until 20 years ago, a high school graduate had two choices. One was to go to a mill and make a good salary wage, and it was more or less a permanent position. Or he or she could go to college, could go to graduate school four or five more years, after 8 or 9 years, get a PhD and come back and teach for Eastern and make less money. Now, it didn't take a genius to figure out which way to go. The physical economy has changed. The mills are no longer there. But the cultural economy hasn't changed. A lot of people still think in terms of what they did before. I've had questions from high school students that my father didn't go to college. He did well. Why do I need to waste 4 years and go to college? The solutions that we propose is to expand our outreach program that I talked about earlier. We have to start earlier and earlier and earlier until we start talking to third graders and sixth graders about college education. We must involve parents. Parents, whether or not they have college education, they are influential on the decision of their kids, and we need to involve them. And our major task has to be to promote college education and not be a recruiter for any particular college, in this case, Eastern Oregon University. That comes later towards the end when they are seniors, we can go back to them and say, remember us? We have to offer college courses on high school campuses. I think part of the problem is that, particularly in our region, where there are a lot of school districts which have very few students, leaving home and going to the big city of La Grande with 12,000 population is difficult. It's traumatic, and we need to talk to them, bring them to college, bring them to campus through summer institutes, but also offer college courses on their campuses so they know that they can handle it. And probably more than anything else, we need to increase our financial aid to the students. We need to do more partnerships with community colleges and other universities. We need to offer more degrees without going through the process of starting our own, because that's an expensive investment, so we could do it with other universities. We need more resources, but who doesn't? But that's here. I would like to insert an editorial that's why we need your support to get the governor's budget, so that we are able to do some of these things. We need to support and retain faculty. Our faculty, all of us, our faculty are underpaid, and we need to address that issue. We need to expand our distance education. And the last item that I wanted to share with you is the need for us to diversify our campus, bring greater diversity, but also internationalize our campus. The bottom line is, whether or not we like it, at the end of the day, where our students graduate, whether they stay in Eastern Oregon or go somewhere else, they have to work and they have to compete and they have to succeed in a very diverse and a very globalized environment. They have to learn how to do that while they're on campus. If we don't do that, if we don't give them that education, that knowledge, that background, we have given them an incomplete education. In order not to do that, we propose to add to both the diversity and internationalization of our campus. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to stop here. I'll be happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Representative Klim.
Mr. Chair, I have several. First would be I forget if there was an actual rural access initiative, I guess is
yes.
what it was called. How do you dovetail on the high school part with Aspire and Gear Up? And you know, maybe that is Aspire and Gear Up out there, but I'm curious about that portion.
We have had a number of discussions with Aspire. We do have a Gear Up through OUS, but we also have had a number of discussions with the Aspire leadership, and there really isn't much competition between us. First of all, there's the question of region. They're concentrating on major population centers. We are remote. We can do a few things that they cannot do. For example, we can offer courses on high school campuses that they cannot do. They can do certain things that we cannot do. So we are much more complementary than competitive.
That's great. And if I may, Mr. Chair, part of the reason I ask is we're considering a general fund package to expand Aspire by, I think, double the number of high schools, and some of us would like to double it beyond that to every high school. So there may be no longer, you know, depending on our success, the sort of urban or population center high school versus non, where you could have at least the opportunity to have it in every high school. And that's good to hear, essentially, though, that you work together and figure out who can do what part better. Second piece was this internationalization. Some of you have probably received the same email I get, but you sort of flagged that there's a gentleman who often writes the committee about what are we doing to prepare ourselves for either competition or partnership with the Chinese, and you know, how prevalent system-wide is Mandarin offered? How many people take it? What percentage of people take, you know, a couple of years? He asks a lot of questions. So my general question would be, how do you feel we're doing at your institution, at least, in relation to people being able to deal with China, primarily because of just sort of language knowledge, I guess?
Well, we're not offering Mandarin. We can't afford to offer Mandarin. It'd be a very expensive proposition. In general, frankly, we're not doing as well as we should be doing, and I'm talking about Eastern now, in terms of internationalizing the campus. We have less than 100 international students. To me, that's way too low, and we are working on trying to increase the number, but that's a very slow process. We have a few outbound programs, both through the International Office of OUS, as well as exchange programs that we have of ourselves. But again, cost becomes a factor. I'm hoping very much that this coming summer, we will be sending at least two groups abroad. Our choir is going to China. You mentioned China. They're going to be in China for 3 weeks, and I think that would be a good first step for us establishing contacts. And we are sending a counselor with them so he could talk to some potential students. We are also in the early stages of planning an exchange group going to France, somewhere around 12 to 14 students with one faculty member going to France. So we are moving in that direction, but if you take a picture of it, how much we are doing to internationalize the campus, today I would say it's inadequate.
Two more quick ones, Mr. Chair.
Representative Clem.
Does Eastern have a situation where a student from Idaho or anywhere can come in and pay essentially the same tuition rate? Or is it a different tuition rate?
We do have a situation where students from out of state can pay in-state tuition.
And that helps provide infrastructure for everybody from Oregon who's there, because the sheer numbers would be too low probably otherwise.
Exactly. Yeah. One-third of our students come from out of state, and if you take that group out, our program offerings will be devastated.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And it makes a lot of sense. One more, Mr. Chair. Do you find in your and I came to a budget hearing out there, and I just am trying to remember the kind of average use of financial aid. Do you find that right now, with the existing financial aid package from Oregon, the Oregon Opportunity Grant, are there a lot of people who fall just not too far above the income scale and don't get it? And this shared responsibility model, where we stretch it way out and really target resources, will this be significantly helpful in your population?
Yes. Roughly half of our students, under 50%, qualify for Pell grants, which are the, you know, for the lowest levels of income. Another, a little bit more, I think it's to overall 70-some% of our students are on some type of financial aid. But still, if we can stretch that a little bit more, the Chair Spence Malta does do that, I think it would be helpful to attract more students. Part of the issue might also be that by talking about it, more and more people will know about it, and people who are not on campus might be interested in coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Lim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned underpaid of the faculties. And I'd like to know, is underpaid compared to Portland metro area? How do you define the underpaid compared to other states? We hear a lot that our university faculties are underpaid in our state, so we are not able to attract. Of course, we have qualified professors and doctors here, but if we give more money, we might be able to attract even good professors nationally.
Well, let me make two comments, maybe three. My first reaction is they are underpaid compared to anybody.
Are you talking about the compare our legislators? Anybody?
No, it wasn't only what I was talking about. Anybody was teaching. more to the point, the comparison of being underpaid is made with a group of peer institutions. These are a group of universities throughout the country who are more or less our size, maybe twice as large, maybe half as large. They have the same mission. They are not urban universities usually. And they're similar to us. They are regional. They offer a limited number of programs. And compared to those colleges and universities, our faculty are underpaid. But we also have to remember that a second point, if I may, the market for faculty is very national. We don't compete with those 13 universities to attract people. We compete with every university in the country, particularly in the disciplines where there is a high demand or low supply of qualified individuals. We have to compete with some major universities. So whereas all of the statistics that we use refers only to those other 13, there's 13 other universities that we compare ourselves with. And that's not something that we chose, to choose only the ones who are paying a lot of money. Nevertheless, the reality is that market is very competitive, and given the demographics of the country, it's going to get a lot more competitive before it gets better.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lim?
It seems to me there's a big gaps and big problems in our state. Somehow that we need to improve that if we want to improve our quality of our students. Just comment, Mr. Chair.
An accurate comment, I would say. The only question I have, Doctor, thank you very much for your presentation and your time. Your last slide has a number of institutional issues that need to be addressed, and I'm wondering, is there a five-year plan or a three-year plan? Is there a plan for that maps out how Eastern is going to address these issues?
Oh, yes. We are in the middle of our strategic plan for the next 10 years, and almost all of these issues are addressed. The last two are part of our budget request, OUS budget request, and again, if the governor's recommended budget is funded, we will receive significant funding for capital construction and deferred maintenance, and that would be very helpful. But everything else on that list is something that we are looking at. We are in the middle of our strategic planning process, and sometime in this coming spring or early summer, we will be making a presentation to our U.S. board of our plan, and once it's approved, then it becomes our manual, and that's what we will be pursuing. And one of those, I would like to end with a comment about one of those buildings which is going to receive some money for deferred maintenance. If you remember from 2 years ago when I testified before different committees, there are some human remains in the bottom of one of our buildings, and we are going to, part of the request for deferred maintenance is to cover those human remains.
Very good. Thank you very much, Scott.
Thank you.
I think our next regional is Western Oregon University, Dr. Minahan.
Chair Buckley, Vice Chair Clem, Vice Chair Grimmel, and committee, thank you. My name is John Minahan, President of Western Oregon University. I'm delighted to be able to introduce you to my school. We're not very far away, 13 miles on the other side of the bridge. A little bit about our mission. We're a school of about 5,000. That's mid-size, average for schools of our type across the country. So we're not really a very small school. Our fastest growing disciplines in the last 15 years. Business is our largest. We have 600 majors in the business program, another 300 minors. Computer science is growing very large. Our programs in criminal justice have been traditionally large and serve the entire state. And, of course, if you've been here a long time, most people still regard us as a premier teaching school because since this state was a territory, before this we were a state, as a territory, we were the first public school west of the Mississippi. And we had a long tradition of providing teachers in the state. We still do that. We're in fact, regarded very highly across the country. We do about $13 million annually in associated research with our teaching school and our institution is specifically designed to be on the cutting edge of developments in teaching. We're very proud of that. Our most recent grant, for example, is in deaf blindness. It's a very small population nationally, but we're regarded as a school that has some first-rate researchers capable of dealing with that particular question. I must tell you that the last few years have seen some major changes in the finances of our institution. We, for a long time, had a very high fund balance, a reserve money based upon our tuition levels, and we didn't raise our tuition. We in fact, had our tuition frozen for a period of time. And so we spent on our reserve. We, in fact, though, during that period of spending down the reserve, experienced fairly flat enrollment growth. And as you know, 60% of the costs of education are paid by tuition and about 40% by state monies. So we spent that reserve down rather quickly and had to make some economies. So we have, over the last couple of years, reduced $3 million of operating budget permanently from our institution. We made hard decisions, and I must tell you that now we're even to the board, in fact, growing a little bit in terms of our reserve. Now, we're still burning reserves, but we don't think we'll be doing that very, very much longer, and especially if we get some relief with the governor's proposed budget, it will be a delight for us to move further ahead. In fact, we cannot grow without some support from the governor's budget. We turned down 100 students last year, which we would have been delighted to take had we not been discounting our tuition. Our tuition is, in fact, the lowest in the state. It was 16% below the average, and so with that, it was really hard for us to accept additional students when we knew that paying for those students would have come from the tuition dollars of students already on campus. And that was something we just simply thought was unfair. We didn't do it. So our growth depends upon additional revenues coming into the school. I must tell you that we have looked for some ways to do that. And one is the Western, what we call our tuition promise. We're proposing to hold our tuition flat. That is, no increase in tuition for incoming students for 4 years. The freshman cohort will come in at a flat tuition rate. The scholarship on that indicates that it's very successful where it occurs across the country. We think it's a progressive way of asking to move our tuition back up to the average for the state system, so we're no longer discounting, but doing it in a way that makes it possible for people to understand the cost of education, and also doing it in a way that is, I think, fair for incoming students. We will obviously raise tuition slightly for subsequent cohort years for freshmen, but probably to the median family income. A little bit of our student population, we're a very Oregonian school. 90% plus of our students come from Oregon. About 30% of our student body is below the definition of poverty by the feds. We are very first generation in the sense that many of our students, about half, have not had parents that have gone to college. So that's also a very important feature of our school. We also have a statewide footprint. About a third of our students come from the Portland metropolitan area, about a third from the Mid-Valley, and a third from the state generally. We have students from everywhere in virtually every county of the state. So we think we're very Oregonian in almost every respect, probably including our finances. We have, however, decided that certain parts of our tuition promise will be hedged. We're not including in this tuition promise graduate students. And we have made an effort in the last year, 2 years now, to move ahead with recruiting out-of-state students. It's very clear that our degree programs and the degree programs of institutions in Oregon are very valuable commodities. And we realized early that we could, in fact, recruit successfully out-of-state and out of country, and we're doing just that. We have significant numbers of students coming in from out of state at 150% of in-state tuition, and we have emphasized recruitment overseas with special emphasis in China. This year alone, we have brought in over 70 students from China who are studying on our campus. Representative, we do offer Chinese, Mandarin Chinese on the campus. But we're finding that people find our degrees valuable, and it's besides simply the finances of this, which actually allows us to carry two Oregonians along for every international student we bring in. It's absolutely important that we move into this global economy, and internationalization of our curriculum is that important. I must say that these students are delightful to have on our campus. They've made a beeline to math, business, computer science, and science courses. They do very well in them. Their English is academic English is quite fine. Some of them are diffident about colloquial English, but that's changing rapidly. And I must say they have changed Monmouth a bit. They tend to use bicycles, and they're around a lot. The last thing I'd like to mention is our emphasis on the Mid-Valley commitment to nursing. We have entered into a partnership with the Oregon Health Science University to bring a Bachelor of Science of Nursing to the Mid-Valley. We're anticipating that that will start in a couple years. At this point, we're looking at some funding for a laboratory on the campus, and also in the governor's budget, there's provisions for us to improve the number of faculty who will just be dedicated to the undergraduate programs in nursing. But the Mid-Valley does not have such a program. There's quite a need for it. We have support from the local hospitals. We will be emphasizing both rural health care and urban health care. RNs are extremely rare to find these days. There's a great need for them, and we're going to be moving into that market. Importantly, we'll be happy to break even in that market. It's a very expensive program. The ratios for accredited programs is 1-8. The program at Oregon Health Science University is, of course, nationally ranked and a very powerful program. So we'll be working with that program here very shortly, hopefully to bring nursing to the Mid-Valley. Our plans in the future are to stay with that, given the demography of the state, to probably grow in the area of a program, a nursing master's program, to produce more teachers of nursing. We would like to look at that program. And also we'd like to look at hospital administration in the future as a master's degree program because of the changing demography, the growth of various kinds of healthcare facilities. There's a need for trained professionals in that program. We're going to be looking at that. By and large, we will continue to grow within our budget. The art here is not to grow without budget, because it seems that if you do that, the students end up on the short end of that relationship. Our faculty-student ratio is about 26-1 at this point. Our growth will depend upon the beneficence of the next budget cycle, and we're hoping that it's a good cycle for us. And I'll be happy to entertain any questions, sir.
Thank you very much. Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the nursing partnership, I just wanted to understand what the differences are between what's happening at Chemeketa, like one's a bachelor's, the other aren't, or how that works and how they work together.
Chemeketa has a practical nursing program as opposed to a registered nursing program. Frankly, in most hospitals, registered nurses are trained in the hard sciences and do many of the duties and jobs of doctors. And in fact, they are often used in lieu of doctors in many hospitals and in rural hospitals. The local, for example, the local administrator here of the Salem Hospital said that they could use 100 of our students tomorrow. I said they'd have to wait a bit. But we have already, just not even recruiting for this program, some 200 students who are willing to get into it. Really, these are middle-level scientists and hard science-trained people, different from practical nurses. Mm-hmm. In terms of the kinds of responsibilities they can handle within a hospital, and they're often used in lieu of the immediate presence of a physician.
Follow, Mr. Chair. And do these two things remain fairly discrete, meaning someone who's doing practical nursing wouldn't do a couple of years of that and then maybe say, oh, I think actually I'd rather go the registered route and go do two more, or are they not really the same?
There are programs like that. Some of the community colleges are in such relations with the Oregon Health Sciences University.
Right.
Our local one didn't choose to be in that relationship. That's why we're in it. And there are combinations like that with community colleges and private hospitals. I must say the tuition level is fairly high for the private side of that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very small programs and not altogether efficient.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Manhattan, nice to see you again. You mentioned the Mandarin Chinese and that you are teaching it at Western. Not you, but it's being taught at Western.
Yeah, I'm not.
And and the question came up earlier with regards to Eastern, and Eastern, of course, has a great program in distance education. Has there been any discussions between the two of you of sort of linking that together to where professors in Chinese at Western could actually be teaching students at Eastern utilizing that distance education?
We have not. This is so new for us that we have not entered into discussions, but I might tell you about an experiment we're trying. It's a very difficult language to teach, and we're trying to experiment with the mix of technology plus face-to-face instruction. We have a number of native Mandarin speakers on the faculty. A couple of them happen to be in computer science, and so we have taken the military's program for learning Mandarin and tried to modify, in fact, have modified the software so that we could actually use it at a distance. We're testing it in the Beaverton High School because they have an interest in Mandarin. We're trying to get both face time and computer interaction time. Frankly, in the beginning parts of the experimentation, the native speakers on my faculty couldn't get the thing to work more than 70% of the time. But we have modified that program, and now it's working better. Hopefully, we'll test soon whether it's an effective way of teaching the language because it's so different from us. So it's not simply a very easy technology to learn and then to use. If it works, we'll be willing to share it with anyone. Free for OS for OUS schools, but maybe at a price for everyone.
You all heard it here today.
Representative Lin.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to bring up the same issue. Underpaid issue, and then Eastern, the university system, they told us they're underpaid. Do you feel that the professors, the staffs are underpaid, or do you have a difficulty retaining the professors?
There's no question. We have the same list of 13 comparator institutions as the other regionals, and we are on the average $20,000 per position, almost any discipline below. One of the tests that we can use is, do we get our first choice in recruiting faculty? The answer is very often no. In fact, in business, not ever. Not recently. We get our second or third choices, and we have often left positions vacant. So we are underpaid by any measure according to national standards. Are we losing large numbers of faculty? Well, we're losing our youngest. Many of our youngest come from excellent schools, publish well, continue to publish well while they're here with us, and we're seeing more of them leaving us for larger, better institutions, that is, more better-paying institutions across the country. So we are beginning to lose people who are short-termers and who have not bought the house, gotten married, had four kids, and are staying here with our sunshine. There are many more younger people leaving. And that's a problem. It's beginning to develop now. It's, I think, clear among our larger institutions with research emphases that that's happening. It's now happening in the regionals more.
Thank you.
The only question I would have, did you have another question?
I do, Mr.
Go ahead, go ahead.
If that's all right.
Representative Cremel.
Dr. Manhattan, I know that there's been always been a close relationship between in the College of Education between Oregon State and Western Oregon. Is there a move at the School of Education into the education administration area where a person that's wanting to continue their education, getting a being able to go to a state university for educational administration and potentially the educational doctorate degree at Western?
No, sir. We're not making that. We're working cooperatively with any of our students who would like to do that, but we are not duplicating that kind of program with the program that exists elsewhere at OSU. Is fine. We're not making a duplicate effort in that regard. It's not reasonable for us to be duplicating those kinds of high-cost, relatively low-enrollment programs.
Is that available? Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Is that available through Oregon State then?
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you.
The only question I had, you mentioned 100 students from China now that have been recruited. How?
How do we do that?
Yes.
Well, we went to China. We have people on our staff who speak the language and who are, one of them is our recruiter, of course, and I sent the provost, and then I went, and then, frankly, the success is not so much the issue with recruiting Chinese students. I must tell you, when I was over there last June, 9 million Chinese students stood for examinations in China to enter their universities. I'm not sure that we have 9 million in the States going to school. I'm quite sure we probably do. Not all of those kids got in. All of them received rankings in terms of their scores, and we have some of the top 1,000 at our place. And the real success, though, was to get the visa rate, grant award rate, above chance, which is about 20%. Second trip over there, I spent most of the time in the consulates and in the embassy across five or six cities, explaining our programs to the people behind the glass, to Americans who were admitting Chinese students, because you realize that the way the law is written for immigration, any student or anyone who gets a visa is regarded as probably staying in the United States, and so they must prove during the interview process that they don't intend to stay in the United States. So with that understanding, we explained our programs, introduced each and every student to the people who were making the visas, and we had a very high success rate, and it continues each term. We had 27 additional Chinese students entering in winter term. We're worried about it getting too big.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Clinton.
Is there I know Western has a pretty good kind of student life, set of student groups and student governments very involved. The Chinese students, is there a Chinese Student Association, or are there things like that?
They're getting insinuated into things very quickly. In fact, this weekend we'll have a Chinese New Year or Spring Festival at the President's house. These kids have managed to figure out Skype. At 2 cents a minute, they can download on the computer, and they have the President's house now wired so they can get video conversations with their parents this weekend.
Oh.
So if any of you are around, it's likely to be quite a scene in Monmouth this weekend. But they are adapting well to life on the campus, both in the dorms and out. Frankly, the food is the biggest issue. Mm-hmm. Many of them would prefer to cook their own food rather than eat some of the things that our normal students eat.
I shared that opinion when I was in college. The same experience. Thank you so much.
I really appreciate
you being here and presenting that information to us. Excellent. Gentlemen, just for your notice, too, on Wednesday, our hearing will feature several panelists on the Chinese education system.
That's
for
right.
Our information. Our next presenter is my school's president, Dr. Mary Cullinan. And if Representative Clem will permit me to do an intro.
Of course.
Dr. Cullinan is in her first year at Southern Oregon University and stepped into an extremely challenging situation at SOU, has handled it with great grace and great clarity, and we are working through to get SOU's foundation set and built for the future, and it's a pleasure to have you working at SOU. Pleasure to have you here.
Thank you for that lovely introduction. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mary Cullinan. I'm the president of Southern Oregon University in Ashland, Oregon. I really appreciate this opportunity to appear before you today and tell you a little bit about our story. As SOU's new president, I can tell you our story is a story in progress. I've been reading some histories of SOU recently, and I've been watching our progress back from when we were a normal school to becoming a university. And those SOU histories read like a roller coaster ride, with sentences such as, in 1878, disaster struck. then, last week I received a wonderful document in the mail that was sent by the family of the author. And it's entitled Memories of the Old Normal School and Dark Ages from 1909 to 1925. And the author, Homer Billings, describes himself as being a small boy in 1894. And he writes about the fall of 1924 when four of us made a pilgrimage to Monmouth to meet with the Board of Regents to press them about reopening the normal school in Southern Oregon. So one thing I've learned is why we're having such trouble figuring out what year we're going to celebrate our founding as an institution. So we're emerging from another painful chapter in our history, but it's a chapter that's given us an opportunity to take stock of who we are, what we hope to be, and how we can expand our reach beyond Ashland to serve the region of Southern Oregon. This period of resizing our academic enterprise to fit our current enrollment will better help us to achieve the goals of the Oregon University system and our goal of sustainability at SOU. It will enable us to ensure a legacy of success for our students in the region. The system's goals include creating an educated citizenry in Oregon while ensuring access to post-secondary education, ensuring high-quality student learning leading to student success, advancing innovation and original knowledge, and contributing positively to the economic, civic, and cultural life of our region. So by facing our current budget realities, we're laying the groundwork for our strategic planning, building on our strengths, and enhancing other areas of study that make sense for students and for the future of Southern Oregon. And we do that already knowing who we are. We're a public university that offers a strong liberal arts foundation for excellent career preparation in areas that are responsive to the needs of the region. We highlight strong student-faculty interaction. We promote academic and civic engagement. We also know the qualities about SOU that attract our students and keep them here. Highly qualified professors who personally teach in relatively small classes, diversity of background and experience, an accessible, beautiful, friendly campus. We rely on signature liberal arts and sciences programs such as theater arts and music, chemistry, physics, environmental sciences, anthropology, sociology, criminology, communication. They're the core of what we do best and offer to our students. Our student writers have been able to develop their craft with Oregon's Poet Laureate, Lawson Inada. Biology students do field work at Crater Lake, the Redwood Forests, the Oregon Desert. As undergraduates, our majors have opportunities to work on research projects with faculty, co-authoring papers, and presenting at conferences. Building on the skills developed in liberal arts classes, our schools of business and education offer undergraduate and graduate professional programs in response to the needs of the region. Our mission of making SOU sustainable and accessible is equaled by our goal of keeping it affordable, and that's a difficult goal. A full-time undergraduate Oregon resident living on campus can expect to spend about $17,000 per year to cover all their expenses. SOU is a Title III school. Over 68% of our students take advantage of some form of financial aid. In our budget retooling, we've made some painful reductions in staff and faculty so we wouldn't have to rely on steep tuition increases to fix our situation. We realize that more of our students are taking longer to graduate because of financial need. We're doing what we can to support them in a path to graduation that will not leave them with huge debts to repay. The SOU's foundation, their top priority this year is to increase our endowment and alumni giving to support scholarships. However, we and our students can't do this alone. Oregon's state support of higher education needs to be more substantial. The regional campuses really need this investment to serve our respective regions. Our student demographics are changing as we admit more non-traditional students. SOU is increasingly a school of choice for older students. Many are interested in our degree completion programs. In communities throughout Southern Oregon, students enroll in our online programs, and they're enthusiastic that we're starting a Saturday MBA program in this coming fall. Some students, like Carla Nelson from Grants Pass, understand the value of education at any age. She's a McNair scholar, and she recently received the prestigious Jack Kent Cook Scholarship, which pays $50,000 per year for 6 years of postgraduate work. We continue to use technology creatively to provide accessible options for all students. This also means helping our students with disabilities. We now have the highest percentage of students with documented disabilities of any Oregon four-year public institution of our size. We've ramped up our ability to provide services for these students and to make their path to graduation as smooth as possible. Accessibility is also, is also about realizing the changing diversity in our region. A growing Hispanic population in our valley and more first-generation college students prompted us to apply for a national Learn and Serve America grant to work with Hispanic high school students and prepare them for higher education. Through a competitive process, we received a $140,000 grant for an Hispanic outreach initiative to increase higher education options for Hispanic students. This was the only grant of its kind awarded in Oregon. Aram Gomez is one of our success stories. A diversity scholar, Aram is doing undergraduate research on different species of crayfish in our region. And this is the work that would be done by graduate students in most larger institutions. Connections between students and faculty at SOU are mentioned most often as the reason students choose to go to school at SOU. Faculty carry these connections into our region where they share their expertise with business and industry. Professor Greg Jones and his students work with the Oregon wine industry to assess the climatology impacts on grapes growing in this region. And as I mentioned earlier, our commitment to employers in our region has prompted us to revive our MBA in an accessible Saturday format. This program will open in fall of 7 and will eventually be housed in the New Medford Higher Education Center. And like many of our academic programs, that program will connect our students with real-world experiences. Similarly, our School of Business Nonprofit Management Certificate Program has helped over 100 nonprofit organizations through internships and volunteer engagements. Students develop fundraising plans, volunteer programs, youth education programs for diverse organizations such as the United Way of Jackson County, Rogue Valley Development Corporation, and the YMCA. Our School of Education is gearing up to respond to a need for new teachers in the face of a growing number of anticipated teacher retirements. Over 40% of Jackson County teachers and administrators are SOU alumni. Looking at the demand for nurses with our growing retirement communities in Southern Oregon, we continue our partnership with OHSU to educate a new generation of nurses. For 40 years now, SOU's popular criminology program places students in local law enforcement positions. A new emphasis on forensics links chemistry, criminology, and computer crime in an anti-terrorism focus. Recently, students conducted a hands-on terrorism scenario with local law enforcement, taking their experiences beyond the classroom. SOU's curriculum also challenges students to be creative. Our strong arts and sciences curriculum enables our students to participate actively in complex thinking and problem-solving. We were named by the New York Times as one of 20 hidden gems in higher education because of our liberal arts curriculum and the individualized education we offer, as well as our student scholarship. We're well known for our flourishing arts programs, but also for our graduates who go on to be successful artists, musicians, and theater experts, tech experts, as well as actors. Ty Burrell is an American film and television actor who graduated in 1993, and his film appearances include Black Hawk Down and Evolution, and he's appeared on Law and Order and West Wing and appeared on Broadway. And many of our students have stories like that. Mining our community partnerships provides educational opportunities to our region. As we look to our future, we're aggressively moving into the Rogue Valley and beyond to find partnerships and opportunities that will increase the accessibility of higher education in our region. This goal has never been more important. Through ties to our community, we're able to provide meaningful and fruitful opportunities for our students, internships, apprenticeships, civic engagement that helps them develop leadership skills and that helps our partners be assured that a new generation in the workforce is coming along to be very productive. One of our exciting new projects is the Deer Creek Field Station, which is a partnership with the Siskiyou Field Institute. And with the help of a generous benefactor, our partnership has acquired a beautiful 870-acre property in Josephine County's Illinois Valley that will be used for research and education. And the ranch used to belong to John Wayne. It offers many opportunities for research in the sciences. Field trips for youth are already being offered on the site, and we're going to be offering classes there next summer. K-12 students from districts in Jackson, Josephine, and Klamath counties, as well as faculty and students at SOU, benefit from our relationship with Crater Lake. The Crater Lake Science and Learning Center provides research and educational opportunities to promote the understanding, appreciation, and stewardship of our nation's natural heritage, and incorporates research into park planning, management, educational programs, and materials. Our new RCC-SOU Higher Education Center will bring a unique academic partnership to the region's hub in Medford. This new building will house a community college, four-year degree, and master's students in one state-of-the-art facility. It will allow two-year degree students to make a seamless transition into a four-year degree and create a unique academic culture in our state that will be enriching for employers as well as our students. Of our new transfer students this fall, 43% are from Rogue Community College, and we hope that that percentage will increase. No university can be successful without building a sustainable role in the community, and we're doing this by infusing our students with a sense of civic commitment as soon as they enter our doors. Our new first-year experience program emphasizes community service for new students with projects such as environmental cleanup, youth volunteer work, and volunteer work with an animal shelter. In addition, our diversity students who must maintain a 3.0 grade point average and do community service, are involved as mentors in local schools, churches, and youth programs. Some students collected and sent care packages to our soldiers in Iraq. SOU communications major and football player Kellen Quick will long be in the SOU record books for his outstanding performances in the field. However, the senior from Idaho recounts that his most meaningful experience at SOU came from a community-based learning project to develop a plan for feeding the homeless families in the Rogue Valley. And speaking of our student athletes, I'm delighted to say they are truly students as well as athletes. SOU's student graduation rate for athletes is 93% for students who complete their eligibility at SOU. Freshman to sophomore retention rate is 80% for those students, significantly higher than our overall rate. So SOU sports programs bring many students to SOU, and they stay to successfully finish the academic programs they've chosen. So our future is all about sustainability. It means investing in the recruitment and retention of new students from our region and from out of state. We're making great progress in attracting new students from California and the Portland area. They're hearing about our academic programs, our small classes, our professors, our dynamic community, and we're using new technology and messaging to recruit students, venturing into the new worlds of MySpace and blogging. We know that once we get our students here, we need to keep them, and that's why we're participating in the Foundations of Excellence program that is helping us revamp our first-year experience. We're also paying attention to our transfer students and how to make it a seamless transition for them once they arrive at SOU from another institution. We are ambitiously hoping to have 100 more students here in Fall 07 than we had in Fall 06. Our forward thinking in the midst of budget adjustments led us to a new exciting venture. We're creating a College of Arts and Sciences out of three schools, and we're combining departments so they'll create stronger disciplinary clusters for students and faculty. And then this interdisciplinary approach will allow us to step out of our academic silos to find synergies that translate in today's global workforce. We're building on our strong sciences program by creating a geoscience curriculum. We will almost certainly eliminate the geography and geology major to meet our budget goals. But there's growing excitement now as our students and faculty are working on some innovative curriculum that will provide both a strong science-based option and an option that appeals more to students interested in policy and cultural issues. So students have been speaking with me about their interest in making sustainability a watchword for SOU, both in our curriculum, our culture, and our core values. Sustainability is about using technology to best serve our students. It's about streamlining services and energy conservation. Our new enrollment management center will be reinforced by portal technology. We're committed to environmental sustainability. Our Medford building will be LEED certified. We're examining the feasibility of Xeriscape for sustaining our lovely campus in sunny Southern Oregon. So when the next chapter of SOU's history is written, I believe we'll be able to say that we seized a moment in time to make ourselves better. I'm hopeful that our roller coaster ride will end. I truly believe our financial situation has given us an opportunity to rethink and reposition ourselves in some positive ways. With increased state investment, what will emerge is a stronger university, known for its quality education and civic engagement, known as a friend and partner to the community and an asset to our region. So thank you. I welcome your questions.
Thank you. Gentlemen, any questions?
Just a small question. In your data, 10.5% ethnic minorities, are they including the international student?
I don't believe so, no. Our international students are a fairly small population, but they're not included in that figure.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I may have been thinking about the theater major and which TV shows I might have seen him on and missed it, but did you mention where this a new SOU RCC Higher Education Center physically will reside? Or
Representative Clem, yes, it'll be in Medford.
Mr. Chair, is it kind of in the downtown portion?
Right downtown.
That's great. I just, if I might comment, I went down to some budget hearings for RCC that we held downtown, and it is amazing what, you know, like many small towns, Coos Bay, even Salem to some extent, until recently, the downtowns were having a lot of problems. And the revitalization and the number of people walking around at 9 p.m., it seemed to me they said something like 1,600 students per night were now in the downtown, and the coffee shops and restaurants and accompanying things. And it was just phenomenal. Very impressive. And this obviously would
add to
that. That's very exciting.
Yeah.
I would say Jackson County has definitely embraced that idea that this is going to revitalize downtown Medford and take us to a new level of activity.
So, do you have any questions, Professor?
Just one more small question.
Thank you very much.
And the women population in your university, 57%, and the men's 43%, which means 14% more women. What's the trend in the future? Is that compared to any other university about the same level, or especially your university is higher compared to any other universities?
No, Representative Lim, actually that's a fairly typical breakdown these days. Women are going to universities in higher numbers than men. It's a bit of a mystery in higher education, actually, as to what has happened. But almost every university right now has more female than male students.
Seems to me that the women's taking over now.
It happened long ago.
we'll figure it out in another 10 years. That's right. Dr. Cullen, if you were to say obstacles to enrollment, can you talk a little about tuition and what that impact that's had on students, potential students?
Well, I can say looking at about the year 2000, 99, 2000, when tuition went up, that is exactly the time that our enrollment dipped rather significantly. And I feel that the price point is a very sensitive one for students coming to regional universities and to SOU in particular. So one thing we're seeing right now is our overall headcount is up over 5,000, but our full-time enrollment is down below 4,000, indicating that students are taking fewer classes at a time. And I think that's a direct result from their having to work their way through. So, I think the cost is very significant for students. I was actually surprised to see that it costs about $17,000 a year with all your expenses to go to college. That's That's quite different from when I was in college.
Probably more than we think, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, if there are no other questions, I'll just simply thank you for an excellent presentation and to remind the members of the subcommittee that the full education committee will be traveling to Southern Oregon University on Friday the 23rd with the Senate Education Committee to have for a public hearing on the financial status of SOU and the education system, as well as to hear a couple bills pertaining, the shared responsibility model for financial aid, which hopefully will make a difference
yes.
in the future.
We look forward to it. Thank you so much.
We have one more excellent university to hear from, the Oregon Institute of Technology, Dr. Martha Ann Dow. Very, very pleased you made it. Sorry about your travel difficulties today, but we appreciate your persistence.
Chairman Buckley, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Martha Ann Dow, President of Oregon Institute of Technology, and I do appreciate this opportunity more than you know to be here with my colleagues. It was touch and go this morning, as the de-icer wouldn't work in Klamath Falls, so we decided to drive it and came in just a few minutes after your hearing started. So I do appreciate the fact that we have this opportunity. Oregon Institute of Technology has a new logo, and that's why I have it very enlarged on the screen. This is a different look for our logo than we have had, and we figured it was time to market ourselves in a new vein. The history of OIT is that we were founded in 1947, which means this is our 60th anniversary. Up until 1996, when Klamath Community College came into our middle region, we were the only higher education institution in South Central Oregon. We're actually the only public university in the Pacific Northwest serving the kinds of technology programs that we have. So we started with a vocational origin, have evolved to programs in engineering, engineering technology, allied health, management, communication studies, and the applied sciences. And our vision is that we will grow and be recognized as an outstanding university in Oregon, the Northwest region, and nationally with graduates who excel in the technological workplace. We will be known for our commitment to applied research, the preparation of world-ready graduates, and partnerships that ensure quality programs and opportunities for OIT to be a leader in sustainability and economic development. A little bit about our profile. The Klamath Falls main campus is around 2265 enrollment last fall, and I'll tell you where we are now in a minute. We have a satellite campus in Portland, two locations, one in the Clackamas area and one in Beaverton. We have 389 students enrolled there, and those are degree completion programs, primarily in engineering technology and management and information technology. We also host two health programs in the Portland area. One is a EMT program, and the other is a clinical lab science program, which we share with Oregon Health Sciences University in the degree awarding. In Medford, we share a program with Rogue at the two-year level, and we offer the four-year level in respiratory care. In La Grande, President Fatimi has indicated to you, we offer a dental hygiene program in partnership with ODS and Eastern. And I'm proud to say that we have just finished a group of students who all but two have passed the registry exam in an 18-month program. So they're going to be doing very well. In Seattle, we have a Boeing outreach program with 103 students enrolled in manufacturing engineering technology, and also a master's degree. And as of this fall, we had a current enrollment of about 3,351 students in fall of 2005, and now we have fewer students in that this fall. And I have to admit that the dip in our enrollment has been an enigma for us, because what happens to us, we get about a two-year backlash when the computer high-tech industry takes a dip in the economy, we get the backlash. About 2 years later, where a student's parents say, wait a minute, are you sure you want that program? At the same time, we've had to freeze or cap our health technology programs because of lack of capacity. And over the last 3 to 4 years, we have turned away over 150 students that wanted the health technology. So you see, for us, that's a challenging balancing act with a very focused mission in order to offset what happens in the enrollment dips. If you look at the types of students we have, most of them are from South Central Oregon counties, Klamath, Jackson, Deschutes, Douglas, and Josephine, and 56% of our students are first generation. In the realm of economic development, more than $70 million each year comes into the Klamath area economy. And even though we have also a statewide mission, we feel very responsible for the economic activity in Klamath County. The community is able to attract new industries such as ESI because of OIT and others. Our areas in renewable energy technology through our GeoHeat Center and the Oregon Renewable Energy Center give us advantages for the future in economic development in the state. Our Center for Health Professions will allow 700 more students to pursue allied health education, offsetting the statewide healthcare workforce shortage. And that is dependent on a request we have in this legislature to enhance physical capacity in a Center for Health Professions. We are requesting a $9 million G-bond, and we have already raised $10.8 million for the match. And this is our first major capital campaign at OIT, and thanks to the wonderful community support and other foundations, we have reached that match. Our collaborative efforts then of OUS, OHSU, and the community colleges will help offset the qualified healthcare workforce shortage. And I always have to use this data because it's not only exciting to me as president, but it's very exciting to our students. And that is the class of 2005 boasts a 97% placement rate with an average starting salary of $43,758. And in the area of nuclear med and echocardiography, unique programs, they start out at $65,000 to $70,000. We're also Oregon's liaison for Project Lead the Way, a national initiative to expose high school students to engineering. In 2005, the legislators cited the Oregon Center for Health Professions on the OIT campus, at that time without any funding, as you probably know, but yet the designation was important to us as we sought outside funding and private support. We also, in 2001, received legislative approval in a bill to create the Oregon Renewable Energy Center on our campus. Historically, the GeoHeat Center is our longest reigning expertise in the area of renewable energy, and it provides technical assistance nationally and internationally, and was first funded through the work of Mart Hatfield at the federal level, and we continue to receive DOE funding on an annual basis, not without having to go back every time and asking again. But the reputation of that center has allowed us to continue to sustain it. Our challenges are this. We have a very focused mission in high-cost programs. The cost per student, then, is larger than other universities. Our unique programs have specialized technical equipment requirements. We also have a very hands-on approach, and all of our students spend intensive time in lab with the faculty, as well as go out on internships where they spend over a year in the health areas training in the industry itself. Enrollment changes have a great impact on small universities such as OIT, and as I've mentioned, is subject to the economic shifts within the high-tech industry. We have a need to focus on retention and student success, but that also requires some financial stability in order to be sure that we maintain those opportunities. So a stable budget with commitment from the state, I think is where all of the smaller universities find themselves in. And we do have infrastructure costs that are not as flexible in sustaining those as the enrollment waxes and wanes. So that's my presentation. I know I'm the end of the line, and I know you guys have had a long day, but I do appreciate this opportunity. Thank you very much.
It's a wonderful presentation, gentlemen. Any questions? Seeing none, sir, I'd like to offer a comment. I was able to watch several of your students and a faculty member from OIT do a presentation at our Business and Labor Committee hearing in Bend this summer, and to use a phrase, they knocked my socks off. They were so incredibly enthusiastic about the projects they were working on. One was the taking, I think it was a Pinto that they were taking to try to, the battery-operated vehicle, and doing amazing work there. But the other was the zero-energy house that they developed. And my favorite part of the story was when the professor said that there's a model for a zero-energy house that was previously built. It does many of the same things, basically follows the weather. It's tied into the Internet, and the house change itself according to the weather, and the initial model cost $50,000 to produce that wiring of the house, but your students did it for under $10,000 because no one told them the other model existed. And I thought that was fantastic, and your students were so articulate and so passionate about their work that it really was quite a pleasure to listen to them. And your university is a tremendous reputation. It's doing a great job. Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe you could remind me what the status is of Klamath Community College. Are they right now in search of building a campus and located with you, or are they somewhere else? I forgot how that works.
They have their own campus, Representative Clem. And I think last time they received a $7 million G-bond, but hadn't raised the match. And so they're hoping to expand that campus. At the very beginning, we had dialogue about co-locating, and at that time it just wasn't feasible.
Thank you.
But we're good partners and continue to work together.
Can I ask you a question on faculty, full-time faculty compared to part-time faculty at OIT?
And I have a number in my head. I don't have a percentage. On our main campus, where all of our programs are more the traditional vein, of 111 full-time faculty, we have about 10 part-time faculty, so very over preponderance of full time. At the Portland campus, it is the reverse. We probably have 6 full time and 27 adjuncts in Portland.
Okay. Yeah. And on student retention, how is that working?
Something we need to work on. If you look at our peers of the engineering technology type schools, we're right in the mix. But our freshman to sophomore retention is only about 67%. What I attribute that to mostly is the math preparedness of the students when they come to OIT. And it takes us a while to give them some extra work to get up to speed in the mathematics area. And we are working hard on that. We have a very aggressive pre-college program right now, working with the high schools and with advanced credit placement in the high schools to partner, to improve that qualifier that makes a big difference at OIT.
Jim? Thank you so much. Thanks for making the trip. We greatly appreciate it. We greatly appreciate the information you've shared with us.
Thank you.
Chancellor, do you care to close, as we say here in the House of Representatives?
Just want to thank you.
Very good. We still have a few minutes left. If there's anyone in the audience who did not sign up to speak or would like to offer comments, we'd be glad to take 4 or 5 minutes, but looks like we're set.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative.
I know we all know about Neil Bryan, the former senator. Uh-huh. We served together. He's here, and glad to have you with us.
Well, welcome, sir.
Glad to be here.
Thanks for being here.
Public meetings.
Let anybody in.
That's it. Thank you, Representative Clem. Well, on that note, we'll close this informational hearing of the House Committee on Education, Subcommittee on Higher Education. Thank you all for your attention. Thanks for being here for your presentations. Thank you.